This podcast is brought to you by the American Enterprise Institute.
If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, review, and share.
Thanks for listening. Here's our show.
What in the hell's going on?
What the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
You don't have to know what the hell is on it.
What the hell's the matter with these guys?
We don't know what's going on.
What the hell's going on?
Who in God's name knows what it's all about?
Hi, I'm Danielle Plecka.
And I'm Mark Thiessen.
Welcome to our podcast, What the Hell is Going On? Mark, is there anything new the hell going on?
What the hell is going on is it looks like the polls are coming in and the vast majority of Americans do not want a Trump-Biden rematch and they're going to get one anyway. Is where we're headed.
It's just mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. The American people don't get their say, I guess, in terms of picking each other party's candidates, but they sure will get a say in November. And so we're trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen in November. And, you know, when you have an election like this where people don't like either candidate, don't want either candidate, they have a lot of contradictory views. And Mark Penn, he runs the Harvard Caps Harris poll, I think is one of the most interesting pollsters out there because he asks questions that nobody else is asking and gets answers that nobody else is getting. But he's got a new poll out, and it shows that 56% of Americans think Donald Trump has committed crimes for which he should be convicted. 56% think he'll be a dictator. 50% think he's a threat to democracy. And 53% are going to vote for him over to 47% for Biden. So he beats Biden by 6 points. That's where America is. That's a snapshot of the US, good old USA in 2024, Danny.
It's schizo. It just is. And look, you know, I mean, I understand, and Mark talks about this much more eloquently than I will, but I understand that people can hold different views. They can say to themselves, I think Donald Trump is a dangerous man, but I think Joe Biden is worse for the country, right? And therefore, I'm going to vote for him. So, you know, okay, you can understand it a little bit. The part that I find so bizarre is this, you know, hating on both the candidates and nonetheless voting for them. How is it that you turn around to your wife or husband or partner or whatever it is and say, honey, I don't want to see Joe Biden or Donald Trump in the White House, and then you walk out on Tuesday morning and vote for one of them?
Well, I don't think that's what's happening in the primaries. I think that's where people are going to be in the election, and that's the thing. What I keep trying to explain to you, Danny, is it's a binary choice, and you're going to go into the voting booth and have to choose between the two of them.
No, or not.
Or you can not vote, or you can write somebody in. You've got plenty of options. But most people will actually make a choice between the two options on the ballot, unless there's a third option, and we get into that with Mark. But look, you know, the reality is that Joe Biden, first of all, most people, one of the interesting findings that we didn't really get into with him, with Mark, is that 57% think that they like things under Donald Trump's presidency. They think they liked his policies. They thought he did a good job as president. And that's hard to argue with when you see the disaster that has unfolded over the last 3 years in this country. Joe Biden is the single most unpopular president in the history of presidential polling, going all the way back to the end of World War II.
What's fascinating about this is that Joe Biden hasn't really been present, right? First, he was in his basement during the campaign, and then, you know, he works a real nice, pleasant little short day, doesn't give speeches, doesn't give press conferences, doesn't give interviews, skip the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But nonetheless, despite the fact that he hasn't been out there offending people, his policies are so offensive to people that they still prefer Donald Trump. I think that's fascinating.
They see enough of him, you know, freezing in front of the camera, not being able to remember the name Hamas when he's talking about the state of the ceasefire negotiations, talking about dead leaders that he just talked to the other day who've been dead for, you know, anywhere from 4 to 20 years. And he's, you know, so the 86%, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll, 86% of Americans think he's too old for a second term. And he's got double digit disapproval on every issue except his handling of COVID, which nobody cares about anymore.
Even the CDC.
But a lot of Republicans look at that and say, okay, well, it's over. We're going to win. And I got two words for you, Senator Fetterman. You know, the reality is the voters have shown that they will elect a Democrat who had a stroke if they don't like the alternative. And Donald Trump is almost as unpopular as Biden. And so voters are going to have to make a choice between two people they don't want to be president, and one of them is going to win. In all likelihood, Joe Biden could get another term. It's entirely possible. Donald Trump could get elected. It's entirely possible. But this is going to be one of the most unusual and painful election seasons that this country has probably ever experienced.
I was talking to my brother about this morning because he said, I just don't understand how, right? He lives in Massachusetts, so he's become a little bit infected with the bug that exists in Massachusetts. And he said, I don't understand how it is that people can know what they know about Donald Trump and still support him. And I tried to explain to him, you know, first of all, people don't pay attention like we do. They don't live in, you know, they're not reading the Boston Globe or the New York Times or, you know, living in Washington. I asked a friend of mine who lives in New York how much he talks about politics. And he's a journalist. And he said, never. Right? So if you are not paying close attention, and the vast mass of Americans don't pay close attention until September before an election, there's tons of data to show that, then you are basically going to go, you know, you're going to go with the guy who's probably better for your everyday life, for your pocketbook. And if your main concerns, as I think Mark's poll shows, as if your main concerns are immigration, inflation, crime, then the incumbent isn't going to do it for you. So it's not so much an acceptance of the bad things that Trump has done. It's more just sort of a compartmentalization of that whole thing that they're not paying attention.
Well, also there's the unprecedented assault on this man. Yes, Trump's behavior was awful after January 6th, and we've talked about that, ad nauseum on this podcast, but the Democrats' behavior is awful as well. I mean, 91 indictments, Charles Manson only had 10 indictments, the weaponization of the 14th Amendment to try and kick him off the ballot, the civil suits to try and bankrupt him with this case in New York, which is just an absolute, you know, monstrosity of a case, where literally the bank said, no, we were happy and we actually did our own due diligence and we actually made money and we'd be happy to do business with him again. No, we're going to take $400 million away from him. The Democrats' rationale seems to be, we need to burn down our democracy in order to save it. Donald Trump is such a threat to democracy that we have to break down all the guardrails and all the institutions of our system in order to stop him. And a lot of Americans look at that and say, that's a bigger threat than Trump. Now, you may agree with that or disagree with that, and everyone can come to their judgments, but that's a legitimate point of view. That's where a lot of people are coming from and saying, yeah, I know Donald Trump has a big mouth and he says a lot of stuff and does a lot of stuff I don't like, but they're not just going after him, they're going after me. They're trying to take away my right to choose the person I want to be president. And so that's why they vote for him, because they're voting against that. A lot of people vote not for the candidate, but against something else.
Right. And interestingly enough, some of the data in this poll suggests that the majority of people think that the cases against Donald Trump actually are not legit, that they represent the kind of lawfare that he himself claims, which is, you know, again, I think there's an underestimation of the mistrust for government that exists and has grown so much in the United States. You know, there were so many bad decisions made during COVID. Government did so many bad things to us, distributed so much unnecessary money, kept our kids out of school, that when they, you know, that when they use the courts to go after Trump for in certainly in some cases very legitimate, in other cases less so reasons, that people don't like it. And even people who don't like him don't like it. I think that's something that a lot of people, especially people in the elite press, fail to appreciate.
But I would say that even in the cases where it might be legitimate, I think you and I would both agree that the handling of classified information is a more legitimate case than some of the other ones are. You know, Joe Biden, you know, would have been prosecuted for this or after he left office if the special counsel hadn't determined that the jury would find him to be a genial, well-meaning elderly guy with memory problems. I mean, remember the pictures of all the pictures of classified documents in Donald Trump's bathroom? Well, they had pictures of like classified top secret documents in boxes in Joe Biden's garage. And people look at that and say, so Trump gets, indicted for this, but Joe Biden gets off scot-free because he's a genial, well-meaning old man. I mean, of course, you know, there's the difference between the cooperation and all the rest of it. There's legal, but Americans look at that and just say it's a double standard of justice. And so they rally around him. And guess what? The Democrats want that. They wanted the Republicans to rally around Donald Trump because they want him to be the nominee. Because if Nikki Haley was the nominee, according to the new Marquette poll, she would crush Joe Biden by 18 points. I don't think there's another Republican that he'd have a chance against right now. And so they want this.
My heart.
They want this, and they may get it. And not in the way they think.
I've always said that Donald Trump was the Democrats' candidate as well. Hey, we have an actual guest on the show who you mentioned earlier, and it is his poll that we're talking about. I'm sure the name is familiar to almost everybody listening to our podcast as we talk about this. Mark Penn is the chairman of the Harris Poll, as well as leading research companies, including the National Research Group, Harris Insights and Analytics, and Harris X. He's actually the co-founder of the Harvard Harris Poll, which is a monthly opinion poll on taxes, healthcare. He's also the president and managing partner of the Stagwell Group, which is a private equity fund. He was Bill Clinton's pollster. He was Hillary Clinton's pollster. He has been at the center of American politics for a very long time, and he just put out a really, really interesting poll.
Here's our interview. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm on with you with Fox News, and we get like 2 minutes to talk to each other, and now we get a little more time, so this is exciting. So you are the most fascinating pollster I know, because you ask the most interesting questions and get the most interesting results, and this new poll is just fascinating. I just want to ask you to explain a result here. So in your poll, 56% of Americans think Trump committed crimes for which he should be convicted. 56% think that Trump will act as a dictator if elected as president. 50% think Trump is a threat to democracy, and Trump is beating Biden 53-47. Explain.
Now you're understanding the American public. Okay? Some of the things you've got to understand about the American public. First of all, they are absolutely positively definite about their choices until they change them. And second, the swing voters, who I classify really these days as about 20%, everybody from 40 to 60 on any question is a swing voter, and they believe a number of completely contradictory things. And the reason they are a swing voter is because on election day, they will have to resolve, I think Donald Trump is a felon, but I think he did a good job as president. Right. And they have to resolve those two things and decide, felon, good job as president, which is more important, which resolves it. And so these contradictory findings that people have, that is exactly what makes them swing voters. And in fact, I decided to put in a series of statements precisely to see that kind of 50, 60% of the people agree with lots of things that seem in conflict. They are in conflict.
Mark, first of all, thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure. As Mark Thiessen said, I'm now falling into the Mark problem as well. As Mark Thiessen said, this is a kind of a mind-blowing poll, and it's not just the Trump stuff. I think, you know, I understand that people are a little bit quixotic. And as Mark constantly tells me, you know, you don't have a choice between one guy and somebody, you have a choice between two very specific people, and that drives a lot of the weirdness. What I would really love to hear from you is, okay, looking at this most recent poll that you put out, what was the most shocking thing to you in it? You're a vet.
Well, look, I think the most shocking thing in the polls today, as opposed to, and let me just go back 1 second. I created the Harvard Caps Harris poll. It's purely a pro bono effort. I was teaching polling at Harvard for 5 years, purely a pro bono effort also, because there was a course that was given there that I took as an undergraduate that was no longer being given. And I said, well, I could do that along with a co-professor, Stephen Ansel Meharry, where I was a lecturer. He was a professor. And I wanted to recreate the kind of polling I did at the White House for President Clinton, which was incredibly detailed, which was two-sided, which had both sides of all of the issues, so you understood people who opposed it as well as people who who favored it and what I thought was truly lacking in most media polls. And so when you look at the questions and the kind of sometimes the complexity of them, or certainly, you know, the first thing I looked at was something like sanctuary cities and discovered that no one had asked a question about sanctuary cities since one I could find in 1978, because they didn't want the answers to the questions. So I ask a lot of the questions that, you know, that people don't want to ask, which obviously are on the public's mind. And that is really the point of polls. As I always say, you don't need polls for the America that you know. You need it to see the America that you don't know. So now back to which was your finding you asked about?
I actually asked you, as somebody who really has been immersed in this, what blew your mind?
The most remarkable finding is just simply how immigration has become the top issue. I mean, I've been polling really ashamedly for like 40 years, and except maybe during 9/11, and except for some sporadic time, the economy is always the number one issue, and you just sort of drone on about the economies. And to see immigration kind of climb up the ladder, oh, it was somewhat important. Oh, Republicans cared about it. Independents started to care about it. Oh, all of a sudden it hit the cities, Democrats care about it. It's remarkable that this issue, which, as you recall, also it seemed like Donald Trump seemed like an outlier on immigration, and he is now the mainstream.
Just to dive into these numbers for a second. So one of them was, do you approve or disapprove of the job President Biden is doing on immigration? Right. Obviously, you get the sort of a slim 12% for Republicans. Democrats are not exactly a robust majority here. They're 64%, and independents only approve at 28%. And all of the other questions that you ask pretty much mirror that. My question really is, you know, okay, I get it. Sanctuary cities, Chicago. I get it, Texas and Arizona. I get it in New York, where some of these illegal immigrants have been bussed by some of the border people. But this isn't an issue that affects all 50 states. I mean, Alaskans are not being bothered by this.
No, I think that it has climbed up the ladder because of two principal concerns. Number one, some people are getting free stuff that either I'm not getting or that I'm paying for. And that angers the American voters a great deal. I have a question, an interesting question. What angers you more, basically? I haven't run it recently because it always comes out the same. Are you angered more by rich people who have too much, or by people who get things, you know, free stuff that from government that they don't deserve? Americans care far more about the second. If I went over to England or the UK, I'd probably get people caring more about those who are, they call, posh, right? But so I think that underlies it. And the second thing is crime. I think the murder of the nursing student is just one of those events now that is kind of shearing through the public as, oh, I can't believe how that, you know, he went here and then he committed a crime there and then they let him out in New York and then he killed somebody. And I think those two elements really underlie it, which is they're getting stuff I'm paying for. And boy, this is becoming a serious crime issue.
So you've advised Democratic presidents, and so you've been in these meetings in the Oval Office and other places. The Democrats saw in 2016 that Donald Trump rode this obscure issue, as you called it, of illegal immigration to the White House and had an upset victory against Hillary Clinton, who is somebody I believe you supported. And then 4 years later, they take back the White House. And the first thing they do is unleash the worst border crisis in American history. Why would you do that and then be surprised that Donald Trump is beating you in the polls 4 years later?
Because generally it was an issue that just base Republicans cared about. And since it was an issue fairly limited to base Republicans, it wasn't really affecting many votes out there. And I don't think, you know, I had another question, which I didn't repeat in this one, that I was asking for a while in the beginning of the administration, which was, how many people do you think are coming across the border illegally? And most voters would answer something like 10,000 or 20,000. So the fact that it was hundreds of thousands was factually so far removed from what their thinking was that that's also why it was a generally obscure issue in the public's mind, even though Fox News and the Republican right, I think, carried it for a long time. It wasn't until Abbott moved people to the cities and the city suddenly said, you know, I need 50 million here, 100 million here, that people realized, I don't even know how Texas has survived over the last number of years as a state, given what the enormous bills, you know, have to be for absorbing that large migrant population. So I think you see that. So that is what surprised me. That is what we see coming up. It is now an issue that reaches beyond kind of core Republicans. And the administration, you know, I don't think the administration ever expected that the issue would ever get that big. And they spent a long time just saying the border was sealed. It's not an issue. These are not the droids you're looking for. And it seemed that everybody bought that until about, 6 months ago?
So I want to ask you about an issue that if you had pressed me, I would have probably said would have been number one. And it's close to number one, but it surprises me that it isn't. And obviously that's inflation. The other thing that surprises me is that the White House, to my mind, has had an extremely inept economic messaging effort. You know, this Bidenomics stuff, inflation is getting better, but core inflation that people are facing at home is obviously not getting better. Why am I misperceiving this, or am I misunderstanding? Is inflation as important to people as I think it is, or not really?
Well, no. I mean, inflation has been the biggest issue until immigration took over here. And I think, again, before the immigration issue, the whole inflation thing, when you look at it, about 60, 62% of the people think the economy is moving in the wrong direction. A lot of people aren't happy. Fewer people think there's going to be a recession now. So there's some easing of the issue. And if you go back, you know, the summer before last was really the high point of economic discontent. And since then, there continues to be general economic discontent, but it is not as intense as it was.
You know, it seems like almost the silver lining of the immigration thing moving in the first place is that inflation and the economy have slipped in importance. But is it really just that immigration has surged because of what's happening, but the concerns about inflation are just as deep? And have people sort of baked this in? I mean, if you think about this, at the start of the Biden term, we had the highest personal savings rates in American history because of all the COVID money. And now we have the highest credit card debt, the highest personal debt in history. It seems like people have just like maxed out their credit cards. And so they're not going to give credit to the guy who forced them to max out their credit cards. And now they're just mad about immigration too. Is that more where we are?
I do think there's been some easing of inflation as an issue. That the recent reports, the stock market is back up. I don't think it's gone as an issue. I think people see prices not increasing as fast, but they're upset about the general increase in price, particularly, you know, of food, gasoline, you know, price increases have moderated somewhat. He's not winning the issue. He's got a 40-ish kind of rating on the issue in terms of satisfaction. But it has eased from the high point here. As immigration has moved sharply against him, the economy is moving slowly a little bit more in his favor, but still against him.
I'm still struck. I'm sitting here looking at this data, and I still have some cognitive dissonance here about the schizophrenia in the ideas people express and the people they choose to vote for. So this terrific, terrific chart that lays out a series of statements. The statement that people agree with violently, both strongly and somewhat, adding up to 86%, is we need more bipartisan legislation to tackle the problems of the country. Okay. For only 14% of Americans want more partisanship, and yet the way they seem to vote and the way their representative act is exactly the opposite. I don't get it. Maybe I don't have any imagination.
Back in the day when I ran these campaigns, We were all about getting the swing voter, because what you just read was incredibly true. People wanted bipartisan solutions. Look, even on immigration, people want tougher border, and they'll also want to give a path for DACA recipients to for work permits and maybe citizenship. And, you know, people do like, you know, a combination of things that solve problems, some from the Democrats and some from the Republicans. And, of course, that's what we did with President Clinton, you know, on a huge scale across all the major issues. And President Clinton's job rating after we did that was, when I went back to look at it recently, was 73, okay? No politician has a rating even remotely like that today, because they're not going for the swing voter. They have been captured by the bases, and they have been sold this idea that the bases are going to stay home, and that's really the key to victory. And when you run for your base and you have an election, you get 50 plus one. When you go after swing voters and you have an election, all the people who you tried to get, who you seem flexible for, they give you the benefit of the doubt. And remember, we had a lot of people who ran on this idea. Bush ran on this idea, a uniter, not a divider. Obama ran on this idea, the same thing. They didn't. Neither of them really delivered on that promise, right? And now people don't even make that promise anymore, right? And so I think that is a big problem, because as you said, hitting these bipartisan solutions is what the public really wants, but the political system has made more difficult.
Okay, but Mark, I hear what you're saying. Everything you're saying makes total sense to me. And Mark, the other Mark, and I remember very well being able to work with the Clinton administration. But your numbers aren't a secret. It's not like somebody has hidden these behind, and so everybody's just going with their base. They can look at the numbers and see that exactly what you said. Why is there absolutely nobody who does this? Is it something about the system?
They have been sold. They're surrounded by aides and people. And they have been sold that you need to satisfy the base more than you need to go after the swing. That it's all about turnout in a few swing states. And that turnout is all about how deeply we energize our base. Now, I try to illustrate what I call the math of voting. The math of voting is very simple. You have an election that is 5-5. One person switches, it becomes 6-4. That's the power of swing voters. If instead of having somebody switch, you get someone else to the polls, it's 6-5. You need two people at the polls to overcome a single switcher change. That's the math, but as you said, I'm rather frustrated that people are going instead by, you see this whole thing in Michigan, trying to pressure President Biden to change Israel policy. 100,000 uncommitted votes. The media made it a big deal. Riff in the party. He has to go heal that riff. He can't. It's ridiculous. They're never voting for Donald Trump in a million years. All the swing voters are very strongly behind a more pro-Israel policy, although what voters really want is for him to solve the problem.
So let's talk about your findings on Israel. So your poll found 82% of U.S. citizens support Israel, only 18% express support for Hamas, 67% say they would support a ceasefire only if Hamas is removed and all the hostages are released, 63% support Israel's sovereignty over the West Bank, 78% support the removal of Hamas from the Gaza Strip, and 73% prefer Israeli control or governance under new Arab states in Gaza after the war is over. That sounds like Bibi Netanyahu's agenda more than it does Joe Biden's. Well, I mean, Americans are pretty solidly behind Israel. The president was, you know, from the start doing the right thing and saying the right things, and now he's sort of buckling under this pressure from his base. Why would you do that when the numbers are so overwhelming? I mean, there's not a lot of 80%, 70% issues out there.
Exactly. Well, now, the interesting thing is, again, does anybody else ask the questions the way I do? No. All right? Typical. So my question says, are you with Israel or Hamas? Okay. The fact that even 17% of Hamas is remarkable to me, given that they're a terrorist group, but that's what this war is about, right? And then there are questions about the ceasefire and dealing with Palestinian civilians and so forth in terms of what the right approach is. Most questions go something like, are you for Israel, the Palestinian people, or both? Okay? And then they show more people are for Israel, but then, of course, a lot of people are for both. But that's not the war. The war isn't Israel against the Palestinian people. Those questions are not really expressing the conflict that we have here. I mean, can you imagine if someone else had a question that was closer to mine, but then they put in a both or a neither, which they prompted for, they still got the same ratio, something like 48-7, but then they got all these people in this other bucket. So it looked like there was, or can you imagine if I asked you, like, during World War II, are you with the U.S., Germany, or both? Or neither? I mean, it's a ridiculous question. When two people are in a war, you're with one side or the other, okay? So and Netanyahu apparently picked up the poll because he was in the area. Because you know what? Nobody else asked 20 questions on Israel. They ask one question, like, or two, really, at most. And, you know, when I probed it, there was a big problem with young people. Young people were divided, not as so much in the last month poll. Actually, what I found is more people over time, actually, I thought they would leave Israel. They did not leave Israel. I think more information came out about the sexual crimes that were committed, that actually there was, you know, more, I think, information that got out there about some of the Hamas atrocities. Because public opinion has not shifted against Israel. It has remained steadfast. And also I understood what was going on in the college campuses. Because particularly when we started, it was about 50-50 among 18 to 24. And then by the time you got to 65, it was 95. So there is a huge difference in the information that people have. There's a huge information generationally over Israel. But the bottom line, where are swing voters on Israel? They're very strongly behind Israel. And obviously, there's a play here by the left, by the same people who recently visited Cuba, to pull the administration's policy and trying to claim that he's politically hurt by his position. First of all, you shouldn't be seen as operating out of politics in terms of that. That's one of the first important rules of strong foreign policy decision making. You are the leader of the country. You have to lead the country.
You know, everybody who listens to our podcast knows how I feel about this. You know, Mark and I are both very, very strong supporters of Israel and recognize this is a war between Israel and Hamas, or to a lesser extent, between Israel, Hamas, and Iran. But what I don't understand is how the White House thinks this is their base. Their base, first of all, you know, historically, 75% roughly percent of the Jewish community in America votes Democratic. Now, that is a very small percentage of America, but a very high turnout percentage of America. And I'm not just saying anything you don't know. I'm just trying to set up my question here. Why is this that they believe that somehow alienating the 82% that are supporters and pandering to the 18% that's on the other side, even in Michigan, is a good strategy? Do you have any grasp on that?
Well, I think we have seen among young people and more recent graduates, a whole theory, you know, in which questions the state of Israel, you know, and the fundamental. And I think you've seen that spread into, would you have a large portion of the State Department sending, you know, protests to his original position? And I think you've seen that permeate. You know, when I saw President Biden's initial statements on Israel, I thought they were strong, they were unequivocal, they were surprising almost to me, and they were in line with his historical positions, right? And what I've seen recently really seemed to be, you know, the White House staff and others trying to drag policy away from the president's original positioning, And the president with his ice cream comments, you know, certainly was not helpful. So I don't know how much of his comments are just for domestic political consumption. I don't really know what's going on, you know, behind the scenes. But I know what I report, which is on Israel. It's quite strong. It's weak among the youngest generations that know the least about the Israel and the history and the conflict. And it's incredibly strong among those over 50 who've seen this movie before. And so we'll see. You know, I was glad they looked like they were playing with a UN resolution and then they vetoed the resolution. And I think, you know, it'd be good to get this aid across. But look, the president's got to lead in these things. He can't be dragged into a political situation. He's got to redocument his original position, as you see with the Ukraine. And something I've always observed is that America has an appetite for really tough direct action for about a month. And after that, the support, you know, typically tends to drain off because they're really concerned about domestic issues. I mean, to me, probably the second most interesting thing is when I array a list of issues, Israel is only 2%. Your typical American voter, frankly, isn't thinking about Israel at all.
Well, this is why you need presidential leadership. The presidents we worked for when they were dealing with foreign policy issues would actually go to the American people and explain to them why these issues were important and ask them for their support and lead. That's how you deal with that. But I want to ask you about another vulnerability that for Biden. If you look at the 538 average now, he's the most unpopular president since Harry Truman. Only person less popular than him in most of the polls I've seen is Kamala Harris. Your poll had a fascinating question. You ask people, do you consider a vote for Joe Biden is really a vote for Kamala Harris because he will likely not serve a full second term? And 75% of Americans agreed with that statement. Not just the age issue, but what would become of the age issue, which is that really Kamala Harris is on the ballot. Is Trump going to be able to exploit that if he's the nominee? And is this a real problem for Joe Biden? I could imagine Donald Trump showing up at the vice presidential debate and saying, I'm debating her because she's the real nominee, and watching her like try to chicken out of debating Donald Trump. I mean, this seems like a sleeper issue right now that Nikki Haley's been trying to raise without much success, but it'll come up, won't it?
Yeah, look, it is a sleeper issue in the sense that, you know, look, we don't know what this presidential election is going to turn upon. In the past, we've had this surprising result that when people don't like both candidates, that actually the issues become more important because the candidates' weaknesses cancel themselves out. And even though they spend like 80% of the campaign attacking each other, which is what I expect here, it turns out that doesn't really matter. What matters is what people think about the issues. And we don't know to what extent it will turn about on Vice President Harris. 75% believe that she would become president at some point if Joe Biden is reelected. Whether or not that's a salient issue, that's up to the Trump and the Trump campaign to somehow make it a salient issue. I don't think it is at the moment, even though, you know, I always talk about, just to divert for a second, I explain that negative attack ads and campaigns are of two varieties. One is when you take a fact that people already know and agree with and you make it important, and the other is when you give them new information. Right. And in this case, they kind of have the idea that she would be president. But what are the implications of that? That's going to be for the two campaigns to fight out on.
One of the issues that I think a lot of Democratic strategists believe will be the knight in shining armor issue that rides to Joe Biden's rescue come November, that brings the turnout from young people who are alienated over Palestine or whatever, is abortion. And I was really surprised, looking at your numbers, it's high, it's important to Democrats, but it's not the top issue, it's not the second most important issue, it's not the third most important issue. I think it's the fourth most important issue. And then obviously for independents, even less important. And for Republicans, we're really only looking at about 5%, which is, probably from a different perspective. Do you see them reading this incorrectly? We've talked about this with Karl Rove too, and he thinks the Democrats, over rely on this, that the miracles of recent elections have not been solely due to the Roe v. Wade, issues. I'm curious about how you see it.
I think it's an important issue. I think the fact that it's not the most important issue doesn't matter. I think there's, when you go back and you look at the suburban women's vote, that suburban women's vote, few people realize, was generally in the past as much as 20 points Republican, right? And that vote is very susceptible to just as a matter of fundamental human rights, they believe it's a woman's body and she should have the choice. Even though, in fact, abortions are only about a third of what they were. Half of all abortions are in three states, California, New York, and Illinois. And most upscale suburban voters who are, I think, most affected by the issue, are not really the consumers of abortion, but they feel very strongly about this as a fundamental right. So I think it is a strong issue. I'll be curious. You can see that Trump knows that it is a strong issue, and he's tried to kind of stay out of the debate of that. And I think it could be, it continues to be an important part. And the Supreme Court, I don't know what the Supreme Court really intended, but if the Supreme Court intended it to let the issue play out in democracy, it is. And it's playing out in a way where people are saying, I have questions about abortion. It's like I could find contradictory, but I think fundamentally they come down on a woman's right to choose.
So let me ask you to explain a couple of other interesting findings in your poll and what they might mean for the election. So you asked, Republicans have moved too far to the right for me. 57% agree with that. Democrats have moved too far to the left for me. 69% agree with that. We need a new president. 82% agree with that. We need new figures to run for president. 77% agree with that. What does that mean for a no labels bid? And I know your wife, Nancy Jacobson, you're not involved with no labels, but your wife, Nancy Jacobson, is one of the leaders of the no labels movement. I interviewed Nikki Haley this morning, and she said she's not running on a no labels ticket. She gave a very Sherman-esque, I'm not doing that. Is there a path for it's like, Ahab and the whale, usually with these third party candidates, they never really seem to go anywhere. Is this a unique year? Is this where a third party could take off and actually win the presidency? Or is this sort of an unlikely scenario?
Well, first of all, becoming president for anyone at any time is an unlikely scenario. Donald Trump, seriously, true. President, Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama, all of these folks started out as long shot presidential bids. And so I always call being president the low probability profession, even for the person who has the highest probability. So, it doesn't happen until it happens. You're right. My wife runs no labels. She's going to come out with whatever she comes out with. I can tell you, I did poll for John Anderson. I certainly am familiar with the openings for a new party. And for a long time, people, moderates in the country, and 38% of the country is moderate, have been dissatisfied that the parties are not serving their needs. And, I always, liken it, if there's an ice cream store and your choices are only, vanilla and chocolate, then it's not surprising that you choose vanilla or chocolate, because you're not giving people Rocky Road or strawberry or any of the other things they might really want to have. And I think that in politics here, the moderates have gotten more and more frustrated. When you cite those people, statistics that you did, that means most swing voters think the Republicans have gone too far to the right, the Democrats have gone too far to the left. They're unhappy with their current choices. Most people are unhappy with the economy. And I've got two candidates here who seem to spend their time working on their bases. So given that, there is pretty much a significant opportunity for the right candidate with the right financing, with the right profile. I don't know whether there will be one or not, but if you ask me, it's always a low probability that anybody's going to win. Is there an opening here for somebody to come in and say, this system is broken, I have the answer? Abraham Lincoln was a third party candidate. The Republican Party was the no labels party of 1860, and he won with 39%. So, you know, you actually win the American presidency with something like 34. So you don't need 50%. You don't even get 50%, you know, most times.
Let's follow up on Nikki Haley. So, I mean, she's getting a significant number of Republican votes. Is that a problem for Donald Trump? That, you know, he's basically the Republican incumbent, that he's getting so much opposition from Republicans.
Well, it's really interesting. When Trump originally showed up on the political scene, he was the outsider candidate against the Republican establishment and against conservatives like Ted Cruz. Now he is the conservative establishment candidate, and Nikki Haley has kind of the independents, outsiders, and he needs those votes in a general election. So I don't know exactly how he's going to fill that hole, but he cannot get to the presidency with the Republican base alone. And so I think that, you know, how that kind of plays itself out and whether or not he can unify the party and get those voters, a lot of whom have real hard and fast dislike of him. Now, they also don't like Joe Biden either, which is why, you know, in England, we used to call them the clothespin voters. They used to, but they have to hold their nose and vote for somebody. And we're going to see how that plays itself. But I think it's a real problem for his campaign.
I think that's absolutely right. So before we came on, we had a really interesting conversation with you. And this is my exit question, because we were still talking about Nikki Haley. She told Mark she's not going to be a no labels candidate. When we had Governor McCrory on to talk about no labels, he said, well, no, she can't be on the ticket because of sore loser laws. And you laughed and had a comment about that. And that's my exit question for you. I wanted to replay that for our listeners.
Well, I think, look, first of all, I want to make clear, I have no information whatsoever. I've just said I've learned through the political years that Bill Clinton said he was never, ever running for president. Barack Obama said he was never, ever running for president. And Hillary Clinton said she wasn't running when I was doing secret polls to see whether she should run one year. The one question you cannot trust a politician on is whether or not they're going to run for the highest office in the land. If there's an opportunity,
Nikki Haley said she wasn't running for president. against Donald Trump.
If they see an opportunity,
you had a comment about those sore loser laws too. That maybe
I don't see how the sore loser laws would hold up. Based again, I'm almost a lawyer in many ways, but not a lawyer. But nevertheless, the Supreme Court has always said you can't add state by state conditions to being a candidate for president. And that's whether or not Donald Trump is a felon. And it would seem to me whether Nikki Haley ran in a primary, that they, if the filing dates are such that you can't do it, then it can hold. But if the filing dates aren't that way and you can exit and run, I would, you know, I think those laws will get brushed aside. But that's just, again, my personal opinion based on what I've read.
Because what this election needs is more litigation. Mark, you are, as always, informative. You ask all the most interesting questions, and I enjoy being on Fox with you, but I enjoyed having like an extended time to pick your brain and get your wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Really fascinating.
Thank you. Great to talk to you both.
Well, you and I are foreign policy geeks, Danny, so let's talk about the foreign policy side of this. I mean, the Israel discussion was really fascinating, wasn't it?
Look, you know, it warmed my heart. I told that to Mark, and I'm relieved, honestly, because you start to wonder. You know, I have said again and again and again, and I said it last week on Meet the Press, people are confusing the loud with the influential, right? Loud people are not necessarily the most important part of any group. They're not necessarily the most important influential in any group. They are just the loudest. And these lovers of Hamas at Harvard and MIT and UCLA and Berkeley are incredibly loud. They're unbelievable anti-Semites. And yet they're not. They don't represent the majority of Americans. I love that number. 82% is great.
And I think the same is true when it comes to Ukraine. The people who hate Ukraine are loud and they're a minority. I think the Mark's numbers are that it's, you know, basically 50-50 on whether we should give more aid to Ukraine. But the vast majority of Americans think that they say that it's personally important for them that Ukraine win. They stand with the Ukrainians. They think Putin is evil. This whole anti-Ukraine movement on the right, they are loud, but they're a minority. And even people who might be concerned about giving more aid to Ukraine, it's not because they hate Ukraine or because they love Putin like some of these guys do. It's because they're concerned about, you know, the border, and they're concerned about other things that we have going on in this country. And one of the things Mark says at the end, which I think is true, is that most Americans are more concerned about what's happening here than they are abroad, and you got to lead them in order to care about these things. But you have a great insight, which is, you know, ignore the loud and focus on what's important.
The majority. And this is where I think, you know, I have given Joe Biden a ton of credit, because I 100% believe that the excellent statements that Mark referred to at the outset of the Israel-Hamas war were a reflection of Joe Biden's sentiments, right? And I think that the fact that the administration has not wholesale fallen in love with the other side is a testament, again, to Joe Biden, because his staff is not part of that 82%. And this is where I worry about him again. And I wrote something about this, and some of my friends were upset with me, but where I worry about the president's influence in his own administration, because people are saying to him, you're going to lose Michigan. The New York Times is telling him, you're going to lose Michigan. Woo, you better be more pro-Hamas. And the answer is, actually, dude, first of all, those people who think you're insufficiently pro-Hamas are not going to vote for Donald Trump. Secondly, they are not in the majority. They're just the loudest. And I worry about him listening to them. I worry about the political strategists who are now deciding they need to start sanctioning Jews in Israel, which is just bullshit virtue signaling. It's all really, you know, I don't understand why these numbers aren't obvious to them as well.
And the other thing is the flawed strategy on, and this is on both sides, of focusing entirely on your base instead of swing voters.
Totally.
You know what swing voters like? You know, even if they don't care about Israel as a top issue, they like strong leaders. They like principled leaders. They like people who stand up for what they consider, at the polls show, they consider to be the right side and the right thing to do. And so you get more, you know, if you want to convince those skeptical swing voters who say, he's too old for another term, and he's, you know, and at that, and he's weak and vacillating and all the rest of it, be strong. Maybe that would solve your electoral problems, and you wouldn't have to worry about the 13% of uncommitted who in Michigan who want to support Hamas. Be a strong leader. You know, what wins elections is strong leadership. And that's Biden's ultimate problem. It's not it's not a small minority of ne'er-do-wells.
I couldn't agree with you more. And knock, knock, by the way, our friends in Congress. Yeah, that's the thing that matters the most. Leadership. Try to
pass the aid.
Exactly. Pass the aid. Folks, as usual, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Take care. See you next week. Let us know what topics you'd like us to cover. You can get in touch with the show by emailing us at whatthehell@aei.org.
Or you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at D. Pletka.
And I'm at Mark Thiessen. That's Mark with a C.
Please rate and review the podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, share it, comment on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this.
Thanks for listening.